Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. This fall, Mattel is set to release the 21st century version of Barbie's Dream House, which is a fully connected smart home. The lights and appliances will activate automatically when Barbie is in different rooms. A child can tell the elevator to lower, can request breakfast to start in the kitchen, or can turn on the tunes. So what sounds like a dream for digitally savvy kids is a regulatory nightmare for privacy experts. The Dream House uses the same technology behind Hello Barbie, which was released last year. That toy was criticized for being able to potentially record children who talk to the doll. The rise of connected toys is raising questions about privacy. Toymaker VTech admitted last year that cyber criminals had accessed the personal information of 6.4 million children. So, should we be worried? Well, we want to hear from you. Do you think the risks of connected toys are overestimated? Do you buy these kinds of toys, or will you? And if you do, do you take precautions? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. And joining us in studio to talk about this is Todd Beardsley. He's Senior Security Research Manager at Rapid7. Welcome.
Hi there.
Also, Josh Gollin is Executive Director of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. Welcome back, Josh.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Todd, let's start with you. Are these connected toys a significant threat, would you say?
That's a fine question. I don't know how much you would say is a significant threat, but it's certainly new, right? You know, that we've never before put this kind of technology in the hands of kids. There's a lot of concern around how they're built, and more importantly, like how they're fixed after the fact. We've looked at toys like the Mattel Hello Barbie. We looked at Fisher-Price's offering the Smart Bear, and I am happy to say that when we worked with Fisher-Price, like, they were very on the ball when it came to fixing it. Like, it's okay to make these mistakes. In security, that's kind of how we think of software. Like, software is always very incremental. And once you find a vulnerability and report the vulnerability to the vendor, if the vendor comes back with a fix, great, you know. And so we kind of keep that cadence kind of going there. But once... If vendors are unable to fix them or unwilling to fix them or unwilling to talk to researchers like me, then you kind of have a problem.
Then they're not good.
You have a little bit of a problem there. But as far as like these devices, like we're looking at an explosion of IoT like in general and kids IoT in particular, just kind of coming down the pike. And we're kind of staring at this IoT tsunami coming into our houses, into where we work, into our cars, into our medical devices. It's basically everywhere.
So what kind of information could be collected? What are we talking about here? We're talking about a three-year-old playing with a dinosaur, right? I mean,
right.
Is there, that's what many people would say. What kind of information are they really going to get?
So, it depends on how the toy is designed, but typically what we look for are things like personally identifying information, like the child's name, child's birthday, child's gender, child's physical location, kind of trivia about the kid, because not so much that it's like your kid's name is not secret, at least mine aren't. But it is often the answer to or the root of a secret password or a secret question to get at a password. Mm-hmm. And so if attackers have access to a broad population of these devices that are collecting data, not safeguarding it in the right way, now they have pretty good guesses on not only like the kid's identity, but the parents' identities. And so like getting at parents' passwords and accounts just based on what they can learn about the kid through this kind of new and unique vector of information.
Hmm. Josh Gollin, and I'm sorry for mispronouncing your last name when we first started. Josh
no problem.
Gollin, what would you say about the threat of these toys, and what are we seeing in terms of them coming on the market?
Well, what we're seeing is an explosion in the development of these toys. And I think one of the first things that it's important to recognize is that the development of these toys is driven by the toy industry is worried. They're concerned about losing kids to YouTube, to video games, to apps, to iPads and smartphones. And so they're looking for a way to make the toys look more like those things. And there's a rush to get these things into market. And it's happening without a careful consideration of the privacy issues, of the threats to children's creativity, of really of children's well-being. And so I think that, one of the things that we need to do is take a step back and say, is this really in best children's best interest to rush all of these things into the market before we've answered kind of the ethical and regulatory questions?
Well, you said threat to creativity, and I imagine here, I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment. If I was a manufacturer of one of these toys, I might say to you, you know, where's the evidence that there's any threat to creativity? And is it time for us to modernize toys as we've done with other things and use technology in what perhaps might be a positive way that could actually help kids learn how to become more tech savvy at an earlier age?
Well, I think
I'm assuming what they would say,
and they do say that.
I'm sure,
but I think one of the things that's really important when we think about toys, there's a saying that child development experts say that the best toys are 90% child and 10% toy. And what we're seeing is more and more being automated and driven by the toy and less by children's imagination. And of course, it's important for kids to grow up and to be tech savvy, but it's also incredibly important that we give them the time and space to exercise their creativity and their imaginations. Take Hello Barbie, for instance. So a child playing with a traditional doll is making up a conversation with that doll. They're playing both parts. That doll is anything that they want it to be. They can be brother and sister. They can be best friends. They can be, you know, any kind of relationship they can imagine in any kind of scenario. When you play with Hello Barbie, Hello Barbie asks you a series of pointed questions that, you know, do you have a dog? Do you have a sister? And it's very driven by the toy. It's very driven by the script that Hello Barbie has. And so all that creativity about playing and making the doll into something else or whatever the child wants to be is lost. And I think that that's a tremendous loss for children and childhood. And the more we make toys look like apps and video games, I think we're losing what the essence of a toy is. And that's about helping children creatively play.
But is there something to be said about also helping children to learn how to navigate a very sophisticated world of technology, which I feel in my age, you know, I'm certainly handicapped compared to my own children, right? Because they grew up with it. So they learn skills that I don't have. Isn't there something to be said about teaching children those
skills? Well, there's no evidence actually that that introducing children to at a very young age to technology gives them any kind of advantage with the technology later on in life. In fact, you know, all this technology is incredibly easy to use. That's one of the things that's, you know, that's why babies can use iPads, because it's, you know, they're so easy to use.
But I can't.
and so, you know, I think when we are talking about younger children, limiting their exposure to technology and giving them the time and space to offline time and space to be creative, to play with friends, to manipulate real objects in the real world, I think is incredibly important. And I think this rush to make our toys look like apps is something that's really undermining children's development.
So both of you have spoken about this sort of rush on the part of toy makers to do this. And I want to talk about regulations, but I also want to remind our listeners that they can join in the conversation as well. Listeners, we do want to hear from you. What do you think about the risks involved in connected toys? Do you buy these toys? Do you take precautions? Call us with your thoughts and comments, suggestions at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So, Todd, I'm wondering, are there potential regulations in place right now to deal with internet-connected toys at all?
I know that the FTC is certainly looking at it. We've talked to people at the FTC. We've talked to people at like state and local government levels that have expressed an interest when we published our research on toy-based security. But as far as regulation goes, it's about as regulated as the rest of the internet in that it's not very well regulated, which is fine when you're talking about things like innovation and, you know, very quick to rapid to market strategies, which is kind of how we know how to build software today. You know, the kind of software that gets published today is often very buggy. It's minimally useful. It's the minimal viable product. And that's kind of the model that we've adopted over the last 15 or 20 years now that we have the internet. I don't know if you remember, but it used to have to like get CDs in the mail to update your software. And so at that time, like software, it was a big deal to ship a bug. You couldn't ship a bug. People get fired over shipping bugs. Now it's very common to ship bugs. But unfortunately, some of those bugs are also security vulnerabilities. And so the way that we handle it today is very much market driven. I can't call the internet cops and say like, hey, these guys are shipping vulnerable software and you have to stop them. We don't have much in the way of software liability. We don't have really anything in the way of software liability, except for in some very specific circumstances around like cars and medical devices. But even those lines get blurred when you start talking about IoT, the Internet of Things, and how those things talk on the internet.
I'm wondering, what can parents do to sort of protect them? I mean, is encryption enough? Or what can folks do if they say they want the toy? Okay, they say, I think this toy may have potential benefits on some level. And they get the toy. But how do they protect information? Is there even a way?
So the first thing I usually suggest people to do is look at the box that the toy comes in. If there's an FCC warning about generating radio interference or ability to accept radio interference, which you have to do in the U.S., then you know that this thing talks on some kind of radio, and that would be either not like the radio we're talking on right now, but something along the way of like Wi-Fi or maybe short distance radio, something like Bluetooth. If you know that, then you know then there it's at least talking to something else, like it's designed to do that. And now you can kind of gauge like how useful this toy is when it's talking on when it's interacting with something else versus on its own, right? Like Hello Barbie looks just like a Barbie and is probably pretty useful as a normal Barbie, even if you never powered it on. And so maybe that would be like, it's a kind of an awful mitigation. You know, it's not the kind of mitigation that Mattel probably would suggest. But if there's a capability of turning it off, and just knowing that it's on some kind of radio frequency at all is a good start. But you know, I'm a giant fan of encryption. I like looking at encryption and seeing how it's implemented. But I cannot expect every parent out there to be an expert in encryption and an expert in security just to buy a toy for their kid.
Right.
It's fairly unreasonable to ask people to do. But that's why you have like security researchers out there looking at this stuff. Yeah. Happy to do it.
All right. We're going to take some calls now. Alex is calling from Medford. Alex, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to say I'm in the middle of the fence here. I definitely see your point about, you know, bringing out child creativity with toys and, you know, make sure that the toy isn't a tool that's, you know, or is a tool that's used by the child to, you know, manipulate their creativity into the real world. And I think, you know, at the same point, there is also something that has to be done to teach people about new technologies and about how to, you know, balance them in your life. So you have to have fun without technology and with technology, you know, in the same regard that you have to learn without it and learn with it. And I think that's true with everyone, not just kids. And I don't blame toy makers for making things, you know, I think it's much more down to each individual parent.
Hmm. So would you buy these kinds of toys, Alex?
I think in, you know, the way that I'm talking about it, whereas if I was going out and having fun with my kids playing a game that was entirely imagination-based, and then I wanted to come back inside and say, all right, here's your device, plug in and shut your brain off, it's going to tell you what to do from here, I think that'd be okay. But, you know, it's much more about finding the balance.
Okay. Josh, what do you think of that? There's a balance somewhere. Is there a balance that, well, that parents can easily strike here with these things?
I think there is a balance, but I think there's a couple things to keep in mind. One is that balance is different as children get older. And I think we really want to err with younger children when we're talking about preschool children and younger than school ready on the side of real world interaction, real world play, real world creativity. And then, you know, strive more towards that balance as kids get to be in school age. I really think there's no harm in delaying introduction to this stuff for kids when they're in preschool. And the other thing to think about is that it's cumulative. So if kids are already spending a lot of time watching TV and they're already spending a lot of time on a tablet or, you know, watching YouTube videos or playing video games, and then their toys are also screen-based, now we have yet another screen-based activity that kids are engaged in. And so now, you know, that it doesn't doesn't leave a lot of time for other things. And so if your toy time, if your internet connected toy is replacing, you know, playing a video game, that's one thing. But if it's replacing playing outside, or if it's replacing playing with blocks or Legos, that's another thing. And so I think when we're talking about balance, that's really important to keep in mind.
Okay, I want to take another call. Jeff is calling from Hancock, New Hampshire. Jeff, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have to take a different point of view on early, adoption of some of these toys to, like, preschoolers. I've seen my daughter pick up games like Little Big Planet and Minecraft and learn complex concepts such as combining objects to create objects, to put objects together, to build entire worlds before she could even speak. And so I have to say that there has, you know, there is some benefit to this that I think, you know, can't be ignored.
Hmm. So your daughter, as a preschooler, was able to sort of
yes.
get complex concepts from technology.
Exactly. A four-year-old who was picking up a game controller on the PS4 and building entire cities in Minecraft and combining objects, wood, and other things to make torches, and combining objects to make steel, and, you know, to make her castle stronger, to build moats, and to protect herself from whatever, you know, demons they have on these games. But I would come into the room and see this elaborate city that she had developed, and she had characters with names, and, they would play out, act out roles and play the games. They made the games theirs. You know, they were in complete control of these things.
Right. But with these internet-connected toys and privacy issues regarding toys that are connected to the internet and what folks may have access to for a variety of purposes, sometimes maybe it's just marketing, or sometimes it may be something more sinister than that. I mean, how do you kind of balance that? You see advantages to these kinds of toys, but what do you do to protect your privacy and your child's privacy?
I think there's definitely a role of the parents to know what toy that their child has exposure to. And obviously, like I know from just tablets, that there are definitely apps out there that are literally just phishing for, you know, children to use their parents' credit cards to run up these excessive bills. So you have to be savvy on your end to know what you're exposing your child to, and you don't just let them do what they want to do all on their own without any supervision.
All right, Jeff, thanks. I want to take that to Todd. Todd,
yeah.
How do parents, you know, make sure that they're up to date on these kinds of things to protect their privacy?
So there aren't a ton of internet-connected toys today, right? Like what the last caller was talking about was more along the lines of video games and apps
right.
and stuff like that. And that's totally in bounds, right, for this kind of conversation. But when it comes to the internet-connected toys, what parents really can do is kind of make sure that the kid is getting trained, because that's essentially what these things are, right? Like, they're training kids on how to use technology. The thing I worry about is that kids getting trained to overshare, right? And to give up too much information, because, like, my kids are kids of the internet, but they also have a security engineer who lives in the house.
Okay.
So my kids never use their real name on the internet. They always have aliases. They will, like, flip a coin to pick which gender they're going to be that day, you know? Mm. My kids are kind of ahead of that curve a little
because
bit.
You've gone
because
through all of this.
Because my kids are wonderful and brilliant, you know, like all parents' kids are.
No, but because you've gone through right. all of this with them, and you've said this is what you need to do to be
right.
safe.
Right, exactly. And so, like, the kind of the thing that parents can do when they're dealing with these IoT toys and their kids is, like, I'm not saying you have to monitor the kid 24/7, right? Like, but if you take a look at, like, well, what are the script that Hello Barbie goes through? Like, do you have a dog? What's your favorite color? What's your social security number? Like, if that pops up in there, maybe not prime the kid to be very interested in answering all these questions, or answering all these questions truthfully. I mean, there's no problem in having aliases, right?
So I'm wondering if there are a set of questions, and say there's really disturbing information that a child confesses online somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any sort of process in place for, like, a mandated reporting, almost like a hospital if a child, or a school if someone says something? Do either of you know? Is there, or are we not even close to that yet?
It depends on the service. I know that, like, so, like, Facebook, for example, they don't make an IoT toy, but Facebook takes a lot of responsibility for the kinds of things that traverse their network.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know of anything in IoT Toyland that...
Yeah, I mean, Mattel said after some pressure, they said that they would report. But, you know, it's an interesting question because there's not really a right answer there. I mean, if somebody is listening to this, and with Hello Barbie, there were actually people listening to conversations, and you hear something that's disturbing, well, you can't not act on that. But at the same time, kids make up stuff all the time as part of their imaginative play. And do you want to, you know, get family services and the police involved based on some kid's imaginative conversation? So it's really a kind of a tricky quandary, which I don't think there's a right answer to, and which to me is another reason to avoid these toys, because really, how do you answer that? Hmm.
Would there ever be a point, do you think, that you would find that some of these toys might be acceptable?
Well, I think, you know, I think ones that aren't designed to collect information from kids. I think ones that aren't being used for marketing purposes. I mean, we didn't even really talk about that today, but the wealth of information that's being collected from toys that are asking kids questions that can then be used for marketing purposes, I think is extremely concerning.
Isn't that the bulk of what's being done here, is to gather information that can be put in some sort of algorithm so you can determine purchasing habits and then sell, right?
That's certainly part of what's going on here. Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yes. And so that's extremely concerning. And so, and part of it is, you know, the privacy policies. No parent can understand the privacy policy. They're not written clearly. They're
unless
very
you're
vague.
Todd.
Unless you're Todd. They're written very vaguely. And when you're talking about a toy, it's even more complicated, because are you going to buy that $300 Barbie dream house and then you go and download the app for it and you see, oh my God, this privacy policy is a nightmare, and your kid has a $300 dream house. What do you do then? Like, you're yanking that out of their hands because now you're seeing the privacy policy. So right. It's even more complicated with the toys and the privacy policy.
All right. Well, I'm sure we're going to have to revisit this again because we are out of time now, but I want to thank both of you for being with us. Josh Golan, Executive Director of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Also, Todd Beardsley, Senior Security Research Manager at Rapid7. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.